Welcome to the True Sports Physical Therapy Podcast with your host, Dr. Yoni Rosenblad. Today, we explore the realm of velocity-based training and dive into the intricacies of the CSCS exam with Dr. Matthew Casturo. In this enlightening session, Dr. Casturo shares his expertise and insights on the principles, applications, and benefits of VBT, as well as valuable tips for preparing for the CSCS exam. Join us as we unravel the science behind VBT, discussing how monitoring movement velocity can enhance athletic performance, optimize training loads, and prevent injuries. Dr. Casturo also provides valuable guidance on how aspiring sports professionals can effectively prepare for and pass the CSCS exam, a prestigious certification for strength and conditioning specialists. Whether you're a sports physical therapist, strength coach, athlete, or fitness enthusiast, this episode offers valuable knowledge and actionable strategies to elevate your understanding of VBT and excel in the CSCS exam. Let's jump right in.
Welcome back to the True Sports Physical Therapy Podcast. We got Dr. Matt Casturo with us today. Really excited to pick your brain about all things CSCS, all things plyometrics. So thanks so much for joining us, Matt.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Matt, give our audience... in case they've been living under a rock, what is the origin story of Matt Casturo and what are you up to today?
Sure. Yeah. So I guess my origin story starting in college. I was really interested in physics engineering. So I chose Ohio State and I spent about a year pursuing physics engineering. And I actually still love physics and engineering. If you look at my YouTube algorithm and all the recommended videos, I love science. But I never really liked programming. I liked working with people more. So eventually that shifted me towards exercise science. And I graduated with an exercise science degree and wasn't sure exactly what to do. So I started my own personal training business and had some opportunities where I was working with Nike actually at the time and in group fitness and in high school strength and conditioning. And did that for a little while and then eventually went back to graduate school and went back to the Ohio State University again to get my DPT. And after that, and actually kind of during the process of getting my DPT, I started making educational videos just based on things that I was learning and that I thought other people might benefit from. And I really do like exercise science and physiology and bioenergetics. So I started making these like really detailed bioenergetic videos on the whiteboard at PT school on like Friday night. And my wife would film and edit them. And they turned out to be like really good videos because I think some people know a little bit too much. The professors that are teaching some of this stuff, they know so much that they don't relate it back to a context that the average student can understand. And I think I knew just enough. Like I knew the details, but I also knew what it was like to not understand them just like a year or two ago. So a lot of my early science videos kind of took off and got some pretty good traction and started to grow our YouTube channel and our Instagram page, The Movement System. And over time, I just figured out like, what do people actually want to learn? Because I can't just keep making these random videos about energy systems and detailed science topics. Like I want to do something specific. And it turns out that a lot of people were studying for the CSCS exam, the Certified Strength and Conditioning Specialist exam, which is kind of the gold standard in strength and conditioning for sports physical therapists, for athletic trainers, for strength and conditioning coaches, or for high level personal trainers who may be in a sports facility. And it turns out that you can teach a lot of hardcore detailed exercise science stuff, but then also get into practical programming things. So I've just kind of over the last 5 years, just refined making these educational videos.
When did you go ahead? When did you take your CSCS?
2017. So,
okay.
Yeah. A couple years ago now.
Okay. So 2017, you sit for the CSCS exam and now you've been tutoring or prepping people to pass that exam. What do you think the positives and also what are the negatives to the test itself and to the certification?
Yeah, actually, I like this question. I like having the podcast format to explain this in some depth. I think the CSCS is great and you have to learn the rules before you can break them. And I think this is really important because I think there's so many people who are young coaches and they're like, I don't want to learn the CSCS stuff because it's too basic and I want to learn French contrast training and I want to learn triphasic and I want to learn fascia training and I want to learn all these detailed systems. But I think you can actually end up doing yourself a disservice if you get into these detailed systems without learning some of the basics first. Because especially tutoring some people, and maybe even some people who've failed the exam or like reach out for questions because they've had struggles with programming, they are interested in all these more advanced topics. But then I ask them, I'm like, if you put 70% on the bar, 70% of one rep max on the bar, and you do 5 reps, how's that going to look? Is that going to be fast? Is that going to be slow? Can they do more than that? That's not a lot of load for 5 reps. Like that'd be, you know, pretty fast. You can move the bar pretty fast, or you can load a lot heavier. You can do 80% for 5 reps. But like, they just have never written a program, have never actually like looked at someone and put different loads on the bar and seen what that looks like. They probably never coached a power clean. And it's like, you probably need to master some of these basics first. So I think the CSCS does a really good job of just getting the basics out there. It's not perfect. I think there are some drawbacks, like especially on just the rate at which new ideas are adopted, because the current edition of the book is over 10 years old now at this point. And there's been a lot of research recently on RPE and reps in reserve and actually just the mechanisms of muscle hypertrophy and muscle growth that are all quite different than necessarily what's presented in the book. Also, some other things that I just don't think are the best. I think some researchers maybe are the ones prescribing plyometric exercises. So you see some kind of silly movements that are very isolated, you know, like a tricep plyometric, just like a single joint movement where it's like, there's not a lot of like, I think most coaches are going to involve more coordinated and rotational movements that are multi-segmented, especially with like something like a plyometric where fluidity of movement is really important. But I think because researchers are trying to analyze a plyometric for this muscle group, a plyometric for this muscle group, a plyometric for that muscle group, it doesn't always necessarily make the most sense practically with, I think, what a lot of coaches are doing in the field. And there's probably some other cases of that. But like I said, I still think it's a really good way to learn the rules before you break them.
Yeah, I think that's a really great way to look at it. I often get asked by applicants or students that are moving through our True Sports program of, do you think the CSCS is worth it? Do you think I should go and sit for the test? So the first thing I always say is you got to look at Matt Castoro because he'll prep you for the test. But then I agree with you that it's almost like a baseline level of knowledge. It shows to me, the guy doing the hiring at this point, that you just gave a damn enough to sit and learn the basics, that you prepped for the exam, hopefully, that you passed the exam. It's kind of like a base level of entry, but then there's so much more to layer on top of. As you grow out your practice, would you ever hire someone without a CSCS?
Well, actually, yes. And the reason is the bachelor's degree requirement. So this is something that I've found just having probably met 100 strength coaches at this point, there's going to be a big difference with a strength coach 1 year. Like, so say you're 25 years old and one strength coach is just now getting into the field because they pursued business, or maybe their parents told them that marketing was a good field, or maybe they did 2 years of something with the army and then now they're in this field, whatever it is, they did something else, or and they're just now getting in the field. They might have a slight disadvantage to someone who has a 4-year degree in exercise science initially, right? Because that 4 years you just spent pursuing exercise science, you know the energy system, you know like some basic science. But let's fast forward 5 more years and then 5 more years. That degree is going to matter less and less. And what's going to matter much more is how passionate you were about the field. Did you keep learning? Did you go learn from other coaches? Did you pursue different ideas? So I think there's a lot of coaches who just ended up for one reason or another having either no college degree, a partial college degree, and then getting into the field and then getting really, really good, but then never really being able to sit for the exam just because of that barrier. And I understand why the degree requirements are there, because you know they want to make this certification more exclusive, and it kind of makes it different than something you could just sit for without a degree. But that does put a small group of qualified coaches kind of out of the running for it. So
yeah, and I, think I, th- Yeah, I think that's totally worthwhile. I think now that information is so available, right, you're able to to really decrease that learning curve as to how to be a great strength coach without the bachelor's degree, without necessarily sitting for the CS exam. You could simply be sitting in your dorm room just picking up so much knowledge, albeit you got to be key around how are you vetting that knowledge and how are you utilizing the tools that you're gaining. But the information is there. I think that's so different than when I was in undergrad and graduate school, where we didn't have this social media phenomenon where we can just get outstanding interventions just with, you know, by scrolling through Instagram. So I think that's totally worthwhile to think about. Is there any move to make the exam more pertinent? Like, I can't tell you the last time I did a tricep plyometric, right? So is there any move to make the test, the CSCS, let's say textbook, more pertinent or up to date?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to release a new edition, I think, in 2025, from what I've heard. And I think they do a good job there of the NSCA is a good organization. I think they are doing a good job of advancing the field. I think it's just things move slower with researchers and with having to write a giant book. The exam actually, in some ways, has adapted faster than the book. So actually, this is something to know, like the protein recommendations from the book, way too low. And the NSCA actually recognized that and released an update last year to increase the protein recommendation. So it used to be as low as 1.0 grams per kilogram body weight for endurance athletes, which is barely above the RDA and just far too low for what endurance athletes need to perform well and maintain muscle mass and a lot of things like that. So that's been bumped up to 1.4 to 1.8, I think, based on a lot of the research over the last 10 years, right? So there are some updates like that I think maybe people complain they come out a little bit too slow, but in reality, it's because there's a whole process behind it to make sure that this is something that people agree on and there's enough evidence behind to make an update.
So in the NSCA comes out and releases like, hey, we were way under dosing our protein intake to body weight or body mass, then is that now reflected in the test? Is that up to date in the test currently? Or there's still the correct answer is C, 1 gram per body weight?
Yeah, so I think that what they did, and this is just what I've heard through the grapevine, I guess, from people asking. And I think the idea is that they expanded the range. So it used to be 1.0 to 1.6 for endurance athletes. The new range is 1.4 to 1.8. For the time being, they're kind of expanding the range all the way from 1.0 to 1.8. And then over time, the only correct answer will be in the new range. But I think because they recognize that people are still studying from the old book, they don't want them to study from the old book, get to the exam, and then get the wrong answer. They're kind of expanding the range. And then once the new book comes out, they'll probably make a full-on update, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense. So when did you realize that, hey, I can really begin to help people pass this exam?
I think it just started out for me. Like I started out just tutoring like one person about the same time that I was making some of these videos and teaching the concepts and just explaining bioenergetics, like the big picture. And I think I'm like a bit of a systems thinker. Like I'm pretty big on like, here's the framework, here's the big picture before I start getting into the details. Whereas I think a lot of students are presented with PowerPoint slides one after another, like here's step one, step two, step three, step four, and by the time they get to step five, they don't even understand really. Maybe they didn't even understand where step one started, because the professor started with glycolysis and some enzyme that breaks apart a glucose molecule, but they didn't really even connect it back to like, why is blood glucose there in the first place? Like, you had to eat something, you had to break it down. Like, what even is blood glucose? You have to get there before you get to step one. So I think I just like do a pretty good job, I think, of explaining the framework and like, where does this information actually fit in? What are the things you need to know before you start learning these detailed steps? And that's helped, I think, a lot of people just understand why they're learning this like detailed step and what that actually means. And then I also try to relate that back to athletes. It's like, if you know this, that's going to help athletes in this way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a sign of a great tutor, right? You're getting your students to actually understand the information is that is being delivered, as opposed to just memorizing step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? And if you can get that big picture, it's going to set you up better for that exam. So currently, what does your daily practice look like?
Oh, so we actually just had a kid for the, we have a 4-month-old now. So a lot of our time is, has shifted in the last few months. But I think I try to stack my week up so that I have all the things that I want to do within the week. Within a week, I try to spend a few hours where I'm actually doing deep work, whether that's like reading a book and coming up with a unique take on an idea. Because I think there's too much with social media and with video creation, with people who have a following of just like, here's what someone else posted. Let me just say that again or say that in a different way. But I'd rather, you know, I have here, I'll show you one of these books that I have in, on my desk. I'd rather go into like a book and find some like piece of information and like think about it really hard and think like, how can this actually be useful to coaches? And there's probably not that many coaches who are reading about the ATP system and the capacity of the ATP system and how much ATP is available to you and like at what rate we deplete that and things like that. So, you know, I ultimately still have to relate that back to conditioning protocols or something that's like relatable to coaches. But yep. I want to spend like a few hours and like really learn a system in a deep way that probably not a lot of coaches are getting to, and then try to relate that back to people, whether that's through an Instagram post and a YouTube video. We usually do like a unique Instagram post and YouTube video at least once a week. So some amount of deep work spent and then putting that into like a video that I find useful and I think a lot of other coaches will find useful. And then I put that out there. Another bit of the week is spent with usually a movement consult or a few movement consults. So lately those have been done just here at home because again, I can hop in and out of consult and then back to doing some parenting and then back to research and then back to this. And then actually recently in this last 6 months or so, we've had some opportunities for collaboration with brands who are looking to educate their consumers more. So we're actually doing after I get off this call, I'm going to have to finalize our script for a course on velocity-based training, which I'm working with the company Vitruve, and we're going to hash out, we're essentially just breaking down all the research on velocity-based training and the protocols and helping educate coaches who are interested in this, but maybe don't know all that stuff, how to put all the literature together, explain it so that way if they're getting a device, they don't just have a device and know nothing to do with it. They actually know how to use it and how to apply it with athletes. So there's some cool stuff with that we're doing.
Dude, that's the same thing you do with the CSCS exam, right? It's like teaching them how to use it, putting the information available, and then how do you use this certification? How does it actually apply day to day? So it sounds like a similar skill set. You're just applying it to a given brand or a given tool, right? And so, and then you can disseminate that information. So that makes a lot of sense. And then are you also functioning as a physiotherapist treating pathology and injury?
Not a lot right now. If anything, like it'll be a little bit of like knee pain or usually an athlete who has maybe some hip discomfort and has watched one of my hip related videos and just says like, hey, I'm kind of seeing part of this, but I need some more help with this. I'll do a little bit of that. And then I'm a substitute strength and conditioning coach right now. I might get back on the schedule full time once we get daycare maybe set up, but I also try to get into the weight room and coach some athletes as a substitute strength and conditioning coach. So it's a little bit of everything throughout the week. I think part of the problem is I'm interested in so many different things that it's hard for me to commit 20 hours to one thing. But that's kind of where I'm at right now.
And where do you see it going? Where do you want to take this entire movement system business?
Ooh, that's a good question. Like, I think I posted about this recently, but I think I see social media as kind of a means to an end to some extent. Like, I don't love doing 5 Instagram posts and a YouTube video and a podcast and maybe another guest podcast, all this stuff every week. I want to spend more time in the weight room with athletes, but I also think that having the social media will provide opportunities to maybe start a gym in the future, which I'd be interested in. I don't know if I'd probably have to partner with someone who knows the in-person stuff, because I've just spent so much time building the expertise on the online side. Right. But hey, if someone wants to start a sports performance facility in Charlotte, North Carolina, hit me up. That's maybe like a long-term goal though.
Okay. Go ahead. Okay. I could totally see that. Do you see yourself with that? If that gym that you open, would that be fitness-based and performance-based? Do you envision adding in your PT side of things?
I would just hire people who are smarter than me in every aspect. I'd hire some PTs who are smarter than me with the lower extremity, PTs who are smarter than me with shoulder. I'd hire PTs who are smarter than me to treat back pain. And then I'd hire sports performance coaches that are better than I am at sprint coaching, and sport performance coaches that are better than I am at coaching endurance athletes. And I'd kind of coordinate and learn a little bit from everyone. I think that to me is more appealing, just because I think I can learn a lot faster and impact more people that way than going to any position that's currently available in a clinic, right? Like, I can go into a clinic and see reps, you know, see a bunch of reps of a bunch of different cases, but I don't think I would learn quite as much or be quite as into it as I would be if I could kind of have some control of the reins.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it sounds like you've done a really good job of knowing what you're outstanding at and figuring out where you can fill in the gap. So that's a sign of an outstanding entrepreneur. So it sounds like you're on the right path there. Let's get a little clinical. So you mentioned velocity-based training. I thought we were going to talk about plyometrics, but I'm totally interested in the velocity-based training. Tell me a little bit more. First of all, define VBT, and then talk about when you would use these things.
Sure. So this is actually something we're trying to reinforce with some of the communication around this. Velocity-based training is a tool. It's not really like a training method, right? Like, it's not a training system like the 5-3-1 or a tier system or a fascial training system. It's not a system. It's just a tool. And it's a tool in the same way that you can do percentage-based training or RPE-based training or reps in reserve-based training. You can do velocity-based training, right? A lot of people know about reps in reserve-based training, right? Like, maybe as you're doing an intro block and you're just getting into like these new exercises that you're programming for the next 6 weeks, you're doing relatively high reps in reserve, 3-4 reps in reserve. You're getting used to the movement. And maybe as you're approaching the end of a block, you're pushing towards 1-2-0 reps in reserve. Similarly, maybe you're starting around 6-7 RPE and you're progressing to 9-10 RPE with some movements as you've refined over the course of 4 or 6 weeks of training, right? You can do this. You can also program with velocity, and you can program. And there's actually some specific benefits to programming with velocity that we don't get with programming with RPE or with percentages. I think RPE and RPE actually works pretty well on an individual basis. And if you're working with one athlete and that athlete is well attuned to what they're capable of, like they've actually pushed hard enough to test themselves, RPE can work really well. But I don't think that it's necessarily a great approach for, like, say, large groups of college athletes, because I don't know, like, unless you've worked with large groups of college athletes, you know that they kind of just get in there and just like do whatever the paper says. Yep. And they can kind of end up sandbagging it sometimes. And understandably, because there's a lot of training involved in college athletics, sure. But giving a velocity range and then also giving a target, really, I think the biggest benefit of velocity-based training is it boils down to having immediate feedback and a target. Just like how if you were jumping and you wanted to jump higher, I probably wouldn't get as good of results if I just told you, just jump 10 times up and down for 3 sets, 3 times a week. Like, it's okay. You might get a good bone mineral density stimulus. Maybe it would improve your jump a little bit. But if I give you a target to jump to and I measure, okay, you jump to 10'4", and you hit that 7 out of 10 jumps, right? And then I'm going to bump that to 10'5", and I want you to hit at least 7 out of 10. And then the next week, you know, we keep a performance target there. There's something external to jump to and to motivate you to, and there's some way that we're tracking that.
Yeah,
that's pretty much the same thing we're doing with velocity-based training. We're putting a, we're prescribing a load still, but we also have this velocity that we're measuring, and immediately, and it's immediately giving you feedback, not just feedback once every 4 weeks or once every 6 weeks, but every single repetition, it's giving you feedback.
Real-time feedback.
Yeah, and then we're telling you, like, if you can push all the way to the top of this velocity zone, then you can load the bar more, right? And then now there's a goal, right? And then instead of waiting 4 weeks or 6 weeks to then add load to the bar whenever you do another test, you can push towards whatever your goal is. And maybe you can increase load in the bar two or three times within that same 4 or 6 weeks. I think that's that's kind of the
powerful.
Yeah, there's a lot of details that we can get into, but that's the basis of it. And just having an external goal and having that feedback can really help athletes progress faster.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. What's barrier to entry there? What are we using to measure the speed of the bar?
Yeah, I mean, here, I'll show you one. is this just audio? I don't know if people can see this, but
both.
I'll pull out a device. It's just this square box. And, you know, the goal of training is to essentially produce more force in less time, force in less time. And then you're going to be stronger. You're going to be faster. A device like this just measures how fast you're moving. And, that number, you could use average speed, but we usually use peak velocity. Like, what's the peak speed that you get the barbell to during the concentric portion of the repetition? So on the way up, as you're shortening, you know, you're coming out of the hole and you're going up for a back squat, or you're lifting a deadlift up, or you're doing a trap bar deadlift and the bar's coming up, how fast does it get to?
Yep.
That peak velocity is what we're measuring with this device. And there's a lot of different things you can do with those numbers. You could, like we said, like, you could set a target, a range, and then you could push towards getting to the top of the range. You can add load and try to maintain your velocity. But overall, the goal with having that feedback is that it's giving you immediate feedback on how fast and powerfully you're moving the bar. And it does a lot of cool things. It can tell you fatigue percentages. So, like, if you started the set at 100%, are we pushing you towards 80% fatigue, 90% fatigue, 70% fatigue by the end of the set? Because if our goal is speed and power, a lot of times we don't want to push you towards where you're at 65 or 70% of your initial power output. We want to keep you pretty close to that initial power output and keep repetitions low and keep those reps explosive, because that's going to get the most specific neuromuscular stimulus, best power and speed adaptations.
Yeah, and that sounds to have the highest correlation to athletic performance. So that makes a lot of sense. How much is one of those boxes that you just picked up?
Around $400. So that is a small barrier to some people, but also it depends, because I know sport coaches who purchase force plates for thousands of dollars. Yep. And can justify that expense. So it does depend on your overall goals. But yeah, around $400 to $500.
And does that, do you have to be working with just the barbell to be using that VBT system?
Actually, that's a good question. Like, I like to put it in, if you have like zip pockets, or if you have like something you could hook it to, you can do plyometric movements and hook it to yourself.
That's awesome. Okay. So you can put it on anything. You can even, can you put it to your, let's say, around your wrist if you're doing med ball tosses or stuff like that?
I actually haven't explored that. I know that coaches have used velocity-based training with throwing, and we actually have some data on that, and we've seen like improved pitching velocity, but I haven't looked into the protocols that were used in doing that. That also, they might have also just used the VBT with bench press and then ended up improving their throwing velocity, but they might have done it with like a med ball throw. I don't actually know.
And does the movement have to be perfectly linear in order to get an accurate reading?
It is a linear encoding device. That said, you can set it up, like, say, like a leg press.
Yep. Or a landmine is what I'm thinking.
Or a landmine. Yeah, you can set it up at an angle. I actually, again, I would have to defer to someone who has used this more extensively than me. I've mostly just used it for power cleans, trap bar deadlifts, squats, bench press. But I think there is a way to use it with some of those multi-planar movements as well.
Yeah, that's super cool. What's the name of that specific device?
This one's Vitruve. Vitruve, V-I-T-R-U-V-E.
Okay. That's super cool. That's definitely worth digging into. That's something that I could see so many applications in private practice, especially at the $400 mark, to be able to really objectify what it is you're accomplishing, or what are your goals for a given session, and kind of programming around that. I think there's a lot of gold there to use in the private practice. Now, walk me through, what is your first introduction to velocity-based training? Like, how do you educate the patient around it? And when, if we're talking like basics, coming out of an ACL, let's say, right? When are you first getting into velocity-based training?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think there probably are some other priorities with ACL rehab early on. And for anyone who doesn't know, like, I think my university, Ohio State, actually has a pretty good protocol around clinical practice guidelines. So anytime that I'm asked questions about ACL rehab, I just say, Google Ohio State ACL rehab protocol. And you'll find this really great breakdown. I actually pulled it up right here, clinical practice guideline. And it'll tell you what are your goals in early rehab, middle rehab, you know, 4 to 12 weeks, and then late rehab, 12 weeks to return to sport. And more so, I think these are going to apply to the late return to sport phase. You could start doing some testing in the 4 to 12 week mark. If you have a Biodex, that's probably better. And there's probably more clinical data on the application of a big Biodex machine. But that said, I think there's
no one has big Biodexes in the private practice sector. So I have a $400 velocity-based training box in the corner. When can I use it with my ACL, and how can I use it with my ACL?
Yeah, so I would say once you're to the point where you can actually do athletic movements, like a fast squat, like you wouldn't be doing this weeks 1 through 4, because there's just too many compensations, and obviously there's not a lot of power. You're probably going to see some type of compensation patterns that we don't want to see. So don't introduce this too early. But once you get to the point where you're able to do a bilateral movement and you're looking to progress and measure progress, that's when VBT or any sort of device that's going to help you measure progress can start to play an important role.
Let's kind of clarify this. So they have their full range of motion. They have good enough quad activation to own that range of motion. They're missing, or they're absent of all of those terrible compensations that you hinted at. Now, what my first session with VBT, they are, let's say, 12 weeks post-op. How are you first introducing this? Hey guys, quick pause and a quick shout out to this new masterclass that we just launched here at True Sports Physical Therapy. Myself and Dr. Tim Stone put together a masterclass of ACL rehab, and we call it From Table to Turf. And the reason we call it that is because it's going to teach you exactly how to get your athlete all the way from post-op day one with the nitty-gritty of regaining all of that range of motion, with the tips and the tricks that we use here at True Sports Physical Therapy that gets our athletes better, faster, and stronger. And that's early. And then how do you progress that athlete all the way onto the field with a ball in their foot or a stick in their hand or whatever their sport is, and teach them how to accelerate, how to decel, how to change direction, all the mechanics that go in there. What drills do we use to get our athletes exactly where they need to be, back on the field, and even better than before injury? And I want you to sign up for that class. Now, you can find it on our website. You can shoot us a direct message and just say, hey, send me the course. It's right now on sale, so make sure you sign up now. It is fully accredited to get you all of your continuing education hours. Sign up for the True Sports Masterclass ACL From Table to Turf. Thanks, guys.
Okay, yeah, at 12 weeks, I think you can get a lot of good work done here. This is a good time where you could start to work through some more athletic and explosive concentric movements. Whether you are choosing squats or whether you're choosing deadlifts or whether you're choosing trap bar deadlifts. The exercise, obviously, there's lots of different options. But we're trying to, again, we have quad deficits here. This athlete had an ACL injury. The goal, just like with anyone doing velocity-based training, is to improve force output in less time. That's how this athlete's going to bridge the gap, or whatever you want to call it, between the deficits that they have and the goals they're trying to get to. Now, you could apply this probably with your compound movements. It's not going to be that helpful for your isolated movements. So if you're doing leg extension, leg curls, isometrics, bridges, anything like that, that's great. VBT is not going to add a lot, but for your compound movements, like your, like you said, like we said before, bilateral squats and deadlifts, things like that, I would throw a VBT on there and just start to track progress. And it'll actually show you over time, like essentially a graph of your progression, whether that's power production. You could look at like wattage, which I think can be interesting if you're keeping a relatively consistent percentage. Because if you're training 1 week, you're training at 80%, and then another phase, you're training at 60%, the power will be not comparable. But if you're training at the same percentage, roughly of one rep max, or within like a range, then seeing power week to week can be a good way to see progress. But you could also just prescribe a certain load and then work up until you get to a certain velocity, and then add load. And this could just be the way that you're able to tell when an athlete can go to the next load.
Yeah, so that would be a good imagine. Example. I could imagine you using it in single joint movements where it's not compounded and just comparing it to the healthy limb, doing it, let's say, a knee extension and looking at the velocity. Now, how do you come up with the ranges in which you want them to target? Do you just look at the contralateral limb and say, hey, you could do this on the left. Let's see you match some percentage of this on the right.
Yeah, again, I haven't really had experience with doing it with single limb movements. So I don't know, but I actually think that could work with, say, like a leg extension, because, yeah, then the target's just the other limb. Like limb symmetry is kind of a big deal at this point. And actually, you could do it with plyometrics as well. Like you could do some sort of like, say you're sitting on a box and you have the VBT in your like on your hip, like on a attached in your pocket or whatever attached to your hip. And you were doing single leg jumps off of your left, single leg jumps off your right. You could just see right there on the screen the height of the bar of left versus right. And that would give the athlete a really good visual that maybe as a therapist, the only way you're doing this is like a side profile video right now. Like you're showing them, here's how your jump looked like on the left leg. Here's how your jump looked like on the right leg. You probably still would want to do that for landings. But for the concentric explosive, something like a single leg jump off of sitting on a box, I can see VBT being more quantifiable than some of the subjective things that we have. Yeah, but
yeah,
maybe for single joint as well.
Yeah, you could do it single joint. You could also do single leg squat, right? You could do some, whether it be hex bar or whether it be even like a backloaded single leg squat, as long as they're hitting the same depth and you can mark that with a box or something like that and simply measure the velocity, right, that they're producing side to side. I think that's a great tool.
Yeah, and actually even the VBT will tell you the depth. So it'll tell you like if you do 6 reps on the left, your height was 24 inches of range of motion. Then on the left, oh, you were only 21 inches of range of motion over those 6 reps. Another good piece of data.
That's what I'm freaking talking about. So talk to your boys over there at whoever's making that VBT, and that's the way it should be marketed. That is way better than force plates, I think, could give you early on at a way more affordable price, I should say. So.
Yeah,
I think there's a huge amount of value there. What are some of the pitfalls of using VBT?
If you apply it wrong, which I'm definitely guilty of applying it wrong because I've only been doing this for a couple years now. But one thing I didn't know early on is that the velocity ranges are quite different for different movements. So it might seem like a good idea to prescribe say you're doing like heavy chest supported rows and bench press, similar range of motion, maybe even similar loads, like, you know, similar weight on the bar. If you're doing like a chest supported pen, like a you know, seal row and a bench press, similar range of motion, but actually the speed of movement is quite different, because with the bench press, you're accelerating through to like empty space. You can actually average much more velocity with a bench press than you can with a row. With a row, the movement tends to be a little bit slower. So if you assign 3x3 at the same velocity, you actually, it would be a good stimulus for one and not a good stimulus for the other. So that's some of the stuff we're trying to clarify with the course. That's a free course from Vitruve that's going to be on their YouTube channel. And it's going to help you refine velocity ranges for the right movement, and also help you understand, like, people are using this not just for like explosive dynamic effort lifts, but power lifters can use this as well. Like, I've seen Lane Norton uses same device, and even if you're doing a one rep max attempt or two reps or three reps and it's fairly slow, it still gives you data on how slow. Was it really how slow? Was it kind of slow? Right. And that makes a pretty big difference. Also, with power lifters, it's a pretty big, like, it's pretty hard to sometimes see, like, especially if you're pretty strong already, the difference week to week. If you can, because oftentimes you're going to max out at a relatively close to the same number amount of weight and same number of reps, like a fairly low number of reps, but this can show you like smaller improvements that you're making week to week, even if the sets and reps, or even if the load stays the same. So there's a lot of applications. You just have to figure out how to use it for the type of training that you're doing.
Yeah, to think it through. Is there any room in the return to sport, or any data on return to sport of where you should be, whether it be limb to limb or some type of other metric using VBT?
I actually am not familiar with it.
Let's put together that study.
Hey, if you're a PhD student, or even a master's student out there, and you want to do some exciting, innovative research, I think there's probably a lot of potential in the rehab space to get more velocity-based training data out there, because I'm not familiar with a lot of it.
And I could also see a tremendous amount of import or applicability with hamstring rehab, right? So how quickly can you contract your hamstring? Because we know so often that hamstring tears or strains happen at higher velocities. So are you training the hamstring at those given speeds? How up to par is your hamstring versus the contralateral limb? I could see a lot of uses there. And that's another good example of using it on a single limb versus a compound movement in order to isolate those possible weaknesses. Tell the truth, dude.
Yeah, well, I think this is an important emerging area of research, because we know, like, and this is something I learned, like, every year I'm like, man, training adaptations are more specific than I thought. Like, every year I just realized that. Because, like, whenever you're initially just starting to lift weights, you're like, if I just lift some weights, I'll get stronger and I'll be better at everything, right? Like, I'll be faster and I'll jump higher and I'll not get injured. It's not that simple. I mean, it kind of is to some extent, but also, like, there's a lot of specificity to the positional specific strength, the rate of force development, and the adaptations that are specific to certain rates of loading. And we just don't have that much data on it to know. Like, we a lot of times use one rep max as a correlate to strength, but really strength is specific to each velocity, right? Like, there's, like, you might have improved your one repetition max strength, whether that's of your hamstring or of a compound bilateral movement, but that doesn't necessarily correlate to the strength that you have to contract your hamstring eccentrically rapidly while sprinting at a very fast pace. It's different. Yeah,
it is. It's very different. Do they have any norms broken down by specific demographics? I'll give you an example. I put a linebacker today on our force plates, and I'm able to not just compare him to other 24-year-olds, to other collegiate athlete 24-year-olds, but I'm able to compare him to this massive swath of data of linebackers who are 24 years old and what their counter movement jumps look like, and comparing his numbers to those numbers. Anything like that in VBT?
Well, now I'm curious. What – how are you able to do that? Is that through the device, or is that through like a paper that you read? Like,
that's through all of the aggregate data of other people using this device worldwide.
Is it Vault or Hawkins or what kind of Vault. Force plates? Vault? Vault. Yeah, Vault's great with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so is VBT there?
Well, Vault has all those partnerships. I think that's what helps them a lot with NBA. And do they have an NFL? They have like rugby partners. They have like a bunch of different sports partnerships, which I think is allowing them to collect that data. I don't think that any of the VBT companies that I know of have like specific broad partnerships like that with large groups. I think a lot of times, like we have data on specific teams, but a lot of times that data is like, okay, 14 athletes or 18 athletes. And it's like, that's not
enough
reliable to the same, in the same way that like you can get large amounts of normative data on the t-test of hundreds and thousands of college lacrosse players, right? It's I don't think it's to that level yet with velocity based training.
But man, could I see the value? Like, I would love to know the velocities of a hex bar deadlift of big league pitchers throwing over 95 miles an hour. And is there a correlation there? Or pick your movement, right? Because I want to know whatever I'm training correlates to this level of performance.
Yeah, there's some, really. There's some. Like, I know I have a pretty sweet graph of like Alabama football players and their power output at different percentages of one rep max. And that was just a strength coach who worked there that posted it on LinkedIn, I think. And I'm like, this is so freaking cool because I can actually have my 16 or 17 year old high schooler who's pretty strong. He's squatting 315, 345 and moving the bar fairly quick. But I'm like, man, you're at, I think
you wouldn't make Alabama
800 watts. You're not at 1600 watts. You know, you're not at 1200 watts, right? Like you're pretty strong for, South Charlotte, but I don't know that you're, you know, across Alabama. The nation, top of the food chain yet, you know?
Well, that,
and
that's
I think
one
seeing
of the,
that stuff is helpful.
It's super helpful. I mean, it's super helpful for patient athlete buy-in. It's also helpful for the therapist to know how close to either what level of performance or ready to return to sport. If you could have them pre-injury, I think that would be fascinating. That's one of the awesome things I've got going on with at least this current linebacker is I've got force plate data on him from before he tore his ACL. I've got force plate after ACL, post patellar fracture. And we can map all this out. How do you compare to when you were coming back from this injury, from that injury? It makes you wonder, like, why are we still testing 40 times for NFL athletes? Like, how well do we know that correlates to success? And are there better tests that we can use to predict performance or health? Right? Or injury rates. Is there anything like that in terms of prediction of injury rates in the VBT world?
True Sports Physical Therapy is growing like wildfire. We have 14 locations, soon to be more. We are throughout the state of Maryland. We're in Pennsylvania, in Lebanon, and York, Pennsylvania, as well as in Delaware, in Newark and Wilmington, Delaware. Like I said, so many more practices to come, and we always need outstanding sports physical therapist. Our treatment style is unique. We are one-on-one with your athlete for 45 minutes every single session. You do the entire treatment. You do the entire evaluation, and they are in state-of-the-art facilities where you have room to run, throw, and jump and really get your athlete all the way back to on the field and better and stronger than they were. We also have outstanding salaries, comp structures, bonus abilities, 401ks, as well as a very strong continuing education offering, including in-house continuing education. And we're looking for you. Now is the time, as we are growing like crazy, just shoot your resume over to Yoni, Y-O-N-I, at True Sports PT, or shoot us a DM, and we will hit you back. We will get you in for our unique, tried and true interview process and really make a determination that this is the right place for you to grow your career and get your athletes better than ever. We can't wait to hear from you.
I think there's some data on overall like workload management. And I think that's interesting because with a VBT, you can track like training volume a lot better. Cause like all you're doing is typing in, you know, 405, and you put the device on and it's going to track your training volume and then your how much of that training volume was done at near maximal versus at what percentage of fatigued state. I think there's some data on that that's starting to compound. But again, like, I don't know that we have really good data that predicts injury well.
Yeah. Well, I guess probably because it's so multifactorial, right? Like, there's so many reasons people get hurt from how much
it always comes down to that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it is hard to predict, but it can measure. Is it a good measurement of how well your CNS is doing? Like, can an athlete come in, do a given test for whatever movement, let's say a back squat, and okay, you're moving at this percentage of your norm, so we're going to change your lift today, or we're going to change your workload on the field today?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you're familiar at all with like heart rate variability graphs, you know, like you see the athlete, like the college athlete who went out drinking like in the weekend, and then you see the tank in their data, and you're like, okay, that's why readiness is not there, and that's why we're seeing what we're seeing in the weight room. I think you can see very similar trends and graphs with VBT, and oftentimes what I'm looking at with that is peak velocity with a given load. So if an athlete's been moving, let's just say 345 on trap bar for four sets of four, and we're seeing a trend, a lot of times you'll see that big dip in performance even like a week or two before the end of the training block. And it's telling me that maybe there's like too much volume in this phase of training, or maybe like something else is going on. But it's a good indication that like we need to dial something back, because the trend was going the right way, and now I'm seeing this trend go the opposite way. And I'm seeing that fatigue is hitting a lot earlier, right? Like, they're already at more than 10% velocity loss on their second set.
It's like they're already fried. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's essentially a correlate to, you know, CNS fatigue or nervous system fatigue in that sense. Yeah.
Which is when you would expect injury rates to go up. I'll tell you, it's like interesting to see. You know, I get like little snapshots of different organizations, just because, let's say, there's a Baltimore-based athlete that plays for this team, so I can see a little bit of into their window of how they're training the team. Minnesota Vikings, before every lower body lift, their guys get on the plates and do three counter movement jumps, and based upon that reading, okay, your lift is going to look like this, or it's going to look like that. Whereas I got some organizations around the league that have force plates, and they're using them once a month, or they're collecting dust. And it just goes to show you, it's like you could have all the tools in the world, but it's like, how are you using those tools? And so I wasn't surprised to see that they just came out with all the rankings of different organizations by the players. And that the Minnesota Vikings were listed as an A+ for their strength and conditioning program, because they become so individualized that every athlete is getting their own lifts based upon their force plate data of that day. And it's like, that's a great way to use it. I could totally see using VBT to personalize to that level.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And actually, I was back in Vegas like 2 years, the last like 2 years, working with a really great clinic out there in Las Vegas, and they had a bunch of NFL athletes coming from different teams. And it was crazy to see the disparity, or like the difference between rehab protocols that were given at different teams. Like, I won't name any specific teams, but there was like a team that had like an Achilles that didn't go well because a player had been walking their dog with like the scooter, you know, dog leash in one hand, scooter on the other hand, and the player re-tears their Achilles. And now all of a sudden they're like, we need to make all of our Achilles protocols super conservative. And it's like, what did the dog have anything to do with how the next 5 years of Achilles protocols are going to go?
And by the way, how is that the elite? You would imagine that the NFL is the elite of the elite in terms of the rehab staff. And it's like, to your point, how could they possibly be making that decision?
Yeah. Right. I don't think it's PTs making that decision though. Like, I think it's, you're getting it from higher up somewhere.
I think you might be right. Or I've seen where it is. You'd be surprised. Unfortunately, at this point, I'm not, where it's like, you see some asinine decisions. I did have a great conversation recently with an NFL athletic trainer where the athlete had a patellar fracture. And so he had a subsequent ORIF. And so they were coming back to Baltimore and they were going to do the rehab with me. So I asked the guy, I said, you know, what kind of like protocol are you following? Or, you know, what's the plan? Are they like, yeah, we haven't really seen a lot of these. So like we printed out this protocol, but we're really not sure how it's going to go. I'm like, how is this the peak of rehab? Like,
right. Yeah.
It's crazy. It's great. I actually think they pulled an Ohio State protocol. So shout out to your Buckeyes.
Nice. Yeah,
the great ones. Okay. A wealth of knowledge, just velocity-based training. I didn't think we were going to go into that in this pod, but it's so eye-opening. And by the way, you're a great spokesperson for it. So I'm not surprised that they found you. That's awesome. Okay. I want to get to the Eric Cressy lightning round. So I'm going to hit you with a couple quick questions. You just give me the first answer that pops into your head. You ready?
Sounds good.
Okay. Here's an easy one. Who's your PT mentor?
Zaki Afzal. So Zaki Afzal is out in Vegas. He's the one who runs the clinic that I was talking about. I learned a ton from him for 2 years when I was living out there, and then we try to still communicate now. And then another one that I learned a lot from is Chris Johnson, PT, endurance-based PT out of Seattle. Super smart guy as well.
Yeah, he's a legend. Okay. Since you're so social media based, who is your go-to Instagram resource for strength training or rehab?
Oh man. Actually, you know who I think does a good job is Bill Miller. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
No, but
Throw Faster. I think he's posting less on Instagram now, but yeah, super smart guy. And he does a lot of the velocity based training, but he's a numbers guy, right? Like he just shares a ton of really great numbers.
Okay, I will look him up. What do you wish you learned in PT school that you had to teach yourself?
Oof. I'll say, the biggest discrepancy was definitely on the performance side. I think there definitely could have been some more information on the performance side. I know that's pretty broad, but it was lacking.
Yeah. And I feel the same way about my graduate education. Do you know of a school that does that really well?
I actually don't. I've heard that Pitt does a pretty good job, and I've met some Pitt grads that have had. I think they just have so much clinical, and UPMC is like a huge network out there. So I think they just have like more access to sports and more advanced clinicians. Yeah, so I think they do a pretty good job.
We have a number of Pitt grads, and they are outstanding. We got a student now from Pitt who I just met today. Shout out to AJ. And he mentioned that he wishes he had some more clinical experience with athletes, but he did say he got a good bit of it in the classroom. So I'd agree with that. Okay, let me ask you this one. This is a really good one. How could we make this PT podcast better?
Oh,
come on, coach me up, Matt.
Coach you up. Or where are you posting this to? Are you posting this out to
everywhere? YouTube? Everywhere you listen to your podcast, that's where we are.
That's a good way to do it. Did you do clips at all yet?
Yes. Come on, Matt. Give me something clips I'm not doing.
I know. I mean, like, I'm just thinking of opportunities here for podcasts.
How about me? Give me some feedback. How could I get better at this? Because I got to get better.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Have you thought about like a round table? I've heard a couple good ones over time. It's probably hard to get enough people on at the same time, but I think you can have some good long form discussions if you break the hour barrier and get like a couple real smart people on for a long form.
I love that idea. That's a great idea. Good feedback. You're going to be on that round table.
Do it in person if you can. Like, I don't, I've only had a handful of these opportunities, but every time I go to a conference or somewhere that there's multiple coaches, try to pull like not just the coaches who know the same thing, but people from a couple different backgrounds and get them to ask questions to each other. I think that'd be a really good discussion to record.
I think that's an awesome idea. Next time you're in Maryland, I'm going to have you on this roundtable. That sounds like the PBD podcast, one of my favorites. So very, very good idea. Thanks for that feedback. Last but not least, if you hurt your knee and could rehab with anyone in the world, not named Zaki Afzal or Bill Miller, who is rehabbing Matt Castoro's knee?
Man, I'm trying to think who comes to mind. I think who comes to mind is what kind of injury? Is this tendinopathy? Knee. Is this an ACL?
Oh, good question. Let's go ACL. God forbid.
Okay, for ACL, I'm going out to healthy baller. And who's the strength coach therapies out there? And
yeah.
You know, I think I've heard they do a good job. And I actually talked to him a little while ago. Seems like a pretty cool facility out there.
It is. He does a great job. Teddy Wilsey is the strength coach.
Yeah,
out there.
Teddy.
He does an outstanding job. He's a PT also.
So and I feel bad. I can't think of the other guy's name here. There, who does? He's specialized in the ACLs.
Yeah, I think it's Wes, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, Wes. There we go.
He's.
I've been trying to not scroll as much, man. To be honest, like, yeah.
It's amazing that influencers are beginning to not scroll as much, because you realize the detriment.
It's already so much work to think of content like every day and to put down ideas and then to go research those ideas and then to think of the hook and then how you have to explain it. It's already so much work to then hear other people's ideas. It's like, man, it can get overwhelming.
It's a lot. Well, you're clearly great at it and you're clearly systematic about it. I mean, your page is so well thought out and so well structured. It sounds like, dude, that's like the way you run your life, is very thought out, very regimented. And I really appreciate it. It makes the information so digestible. I think that really came through in today's conversation. Tell us where we can find you, how we can get in touch with you, who you want to hear from.
Awesome. Yeah. I think my goal with our page is to just be a really good communicator of ideas. So I'm not the expert on any one specific topic. I think there's actually better people on velocity-based training. There's better people to follow on the physical therapy side. But I try to learn a couple topics really well. And I think that sets young strength conditioning coaches especially up for success in wherever they want to go specialize. So my goal is just to mostly educate young strength conditioning coaches, either in school, 1 to 5 or 8 years out of school, who are really trying to understand the basics well, the basic science, the basics of movement. And then if you want to get detailed and go down into any one specific area, maybe I can point you in the right direction of other people. So if that's what you're interested in, you can follow us. We're doing a lot on YouTube lately. So that's The Movement System on YouTube. We're right about to hit 100,000 subscribers, probably in a week or so. So I'm really enjoying YouTube and then also Instagram as well. We have a podcast, The Movement System Podcast, that you can check out if you want some longer form discussions where I go usually into a topic and dive into a bunch of numbers.
Awesome.
Yeah, all those places. Thanks for having me
on. Yeah, Matt, great information. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you. I'm looking forward to getting all the feedback. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks. Take care, guys.